the Bank of New Hampshire stage, Capital Center for the Arts. What a wonderful venue. One of our great sponsors, Phil Tobbs, one of the mission here as well. We thank our friends at Laconia Harley-Davidson. So I tried this novel concept, Phil, and it was, okay, there was just a presidential debate, and our next guest was, you know, he's done these presidential debates just before Veterans Day. Maybe my colleagues in the national media will actually ask a question about veterans. Crickets.
Nope.
Crickets.
Didn't happen.
And you look at Congress, and they can't agree on a lot. We almost had WWE, NHL the other day passing a couple of bills. And, here are the numbers. Phil, why don't you share, before we bring in Governor Chris Christie in person here, one of the presidential candidates, former governor of New Jersey, just met the former First Lady of New Jersey, but the governor running for president, Chris Christie. But why don't you just explain the numbers since the war on terror. In one state of New Hampshire, 1.3 million people of veterans who have taken their own lives.
Yeah, and our statistics are the same as every other state, but it really brings it home. So Staff Sergeant Tanner Grone just perished in service last week in the Mediterranean.
A night stalker.
He is now the 95th casualty from New Hampshire since the war on terror began, 95. And in that same period of time, more than 800 of our own have come home safely from deployments and have taken their own lives.
In New Hampshire.
It's one every 8 days in New Hampshire.
And Governor Christie, I know you've canvassed the state. I'm going to let you talk in a minute because you're here to talk and share with. But thank you for being with us. But in Manchester alone, I found out last week, we have this Liberty House for transitional housing. Manchester alone, 2,200 veterans this year alone have had to go there for clothing or food needs. That's not acceptable to me.
Nope.
Less than 1%. But thank you for being here, Governor Christie.
Jack, thanks for having me, Phil. Good to see you again. And for the audience here, thank you for taking time to show up and care and listen about this issue. Look, this, you mentioned to me before we got on the air, Jack. This was a huge issue for me in New Jersey. We have one of the biggest bases in the east in New Jersey, you know, combined Fort Dix, McGuire Air Force Base. And so we have an enormous active duty community, and then a veteran community that has served there and stays. And we have a state department, cabinet-level department, that deals with veterans in New Jersey. And, one of the things that I spent a lot of time working on was trying to cut the VA out of it and really provide a lot of the services that you guys were referring to, you know, at the state level. And it cost us some more money. But what it did was give our veterans in New Jersey greater access to not just mental health care, which is really the front line, as
right.
You mentioned before, but they have other health care issues that, you know, we have a VA hospital, two VA hospitals in New Jersey, but the waiting list to get the kind of care that they need is often just out of control. And so part of what we did in New Jersey was to make some of these services available at the state level. We got some hospitals to donate care to veterans who are in need. But in the end, I think what the bigger problem, the way this needs to be solved, is that if you're honorably discharged from the United States military, any branch, you should get a card that permits you to go to any doctor you want to go to. If you want to go to the VA, great. If you can get care at the VA, great. But if not, you should be able to go to any other private doctor, and the government should pay for that. I think that's the least we can do for vets who have served and been honorably discharged.
I'd agree with you, Governor Christie, but it's always a turf war. The VA is supposed to be that health care system for veterans. That's what taxpayers and everyone believes. But we know there are cracks. We know there's red tape. General Bulldog was just here saying that as of November 23, now there are 1 million pending VA claims, the highest since 2012. So we're trying to cut down on the red tape, but why can't we just have simplistic ideas like that? Credit card, you served, you go anywhere. Can't that happen?
Well, because there hasn't been a president who's been willing to just say, I want to make it happen. I'm a Republican from a blue state where the answer that I would get often when I first asked a question or made a proposal was no, because I had a Democratic legislature. So I'm used to that, and you just bull your way through it. And we did it in New Jersey with vets in a way that was not as broad as what I'm talking about nationally. We had a rely upon some additional state funding, but also from, you know, hospitals that were willing to donate care as well. They shouldn't have to rely upon charity. They have given their every measure of effort and devotion that we've asked them to give. And I don't think giving them available health care for the rest of their lives, not just from the VA, but from any physician that they want to go to, is too much to ask for, nor do I think it will add that much to what we spend overall, because I do think that it'll bring down the numbers at the VA as well and make those who want to go to the VA make it even more accessible to them.
Jack, you know, we talked about this a little earlier with the VA and the bureaucracy, but we know when there is a war, there's going to be a lot of suicides. I was, like you, Jack, I got to go down and participate in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, in a national security seminar, which is really an amazing thing to do, and I hope everybody would get a chance to do that. You spend a week at the War College.
Best week of my adult life.
I loved it, too. It was an incredible week, and you learn a lot, and there were a lot of foreign soldiers there. And, for example, there was a high-ranking member of the Ukrainian army who was the next day was going to deploy in the Ukraine. He told us they knew from Bosnia and the conflict there that for every casualty they had during the war, there would be 10x the number of suicides later. That's what they've seen from Bosnia and other wars. And we know this, too, in America, and that's part of what the VA is supposed to be doing. Governor, I told the story earlier, and I think you know about this. The VA actually had a great idea. 988, just one simple number to try to reduce suicide. Anybody can call 988. You don't have to be a veteran. If you do a veteran, you push one. Nobody knows about it. Came out last June. Great idea.
Yep.
Nobody knows. Where's all the marketing? Why are there no posters up? Why is nobody talking about that? Swim with a Mission is the only group in New Hampshire that's put posters up everywhere to tell everybody about this 988 number.
Yep.
Right? 15 months later, the VA still hasn't done any marketing. Why is that?
There's no real explanation for it that makes any sense, Phil. I think, you know, we did this with addiction in New Jersey across everybody, whether you're a veteran, you know, a young person, older person. And we set up a 24-hour helpline that we set up at Rutgers University's health clinic that then could give people immediate referral to a place where they could go and get help for their addiction. Well, one of the things that, you know, my wife's here with me, Mary Pat, and I did, was we did commercials that we had the state pay for, and then we also had some donated through public service announcements, where we went on and gave the NJ helpline. That was 1-877-NJ-HELP, right? And people could call it, but we had to do it over and over again. We did billboards. We did posters. We did TV commercials, radio commercials. And you have to do it over and over again to get to people. And it is a good idea to have a helpline like that because it can be anonymous when you first get on the call. A lot of people are self-conscious about it. What we need to understand is that our veterans, those men and women, are incredibly proud people.
Yeah.
You know, they've served.
And they're not good at asking for assistance
or
support.
No, they give help. They don't ask for help.
And you've heard this too, Governor and Phil. So often I've said to a veteran, why didn't you reach out to Veterans Counter, Swim with a Mission, or one of these great groups here, or the VA. I don't need the help of someone else. Someone needs it more than me. So that's an attitude. And they could be battling from depression, anxiety, mental health. Someone else needs it, so they don't get the support. And there's also a big difference between entitlement and earned, I say on my show.
Mm-hmm.
We have 330 million plus Americans, very entitled. They want to know, where's my slice, my Medicare, my social. And I get it, Social Security, you pay into it. That's not my point. But earned is different. We have a contract when they serve. So I'm worried about young people. Why should they serve if we don't take better care of them on the back end?
No, look, we can't continue to rely on people's selflessness and their patriotism.
And the same families.
Exactly. And you see that often.
Yeah.
It's generation after generation and multiple people within each generation who make the military part of their whole lives. So we can't count on that. We have to be able to say to these folks, every one of them, that you have served your country,
right,
and you've sacrificed, and this is the least we can do. You brought up something else before, which I think is happening at both the enlisted level now and with veterans. I mean, there are enlisted families now and veteran families that go to bed hungry at night. I mean, that's a disgrace in this country.
Yeah.
To think that we need to have a family of a member of our military have food stamps.
Yeah.
Because they don't get paid enough. You know, we have a $780 billion Pentagon budget. It seems to me that should be enough to, at minimum, be able to compensate our vets not our vets, but our active duty folks.
Yeah.
In terms of getting them fed, and with veterans too, it's the fact that they can't go out and be able to sustain themselves without that makes them feel lesser.
And you know, Governor Christie, our Veterans Town Hall Forum presidential candidate, Chris Christie. You know, New Hampshire, Maine, our listening region, of course, we're national now, but in New England on the stations, our network, we're always ranked as one of the safest, healthiest, most affluent places to live in the country, therefore the world. I found out last week doing our food drive for the pantries that in Manchester alone, one city in New Hampshire in October, there were over 1,000 needs from local veterans for food, clothing, assistance. That, to me, 913 people in Somersworth and Berwick needed support, and many of them were veterans. That means we're failing. I mean, we're supposedly one of the best states to live in, but we have veterans in our communities that are going hungry. And to me, that is unacceptable. To me, I just don't get that.
Yeah, but look, and that's why we spent so much time when I was governor with our Adjutant General of the National Guard, who runs the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, to be doing that outreach. Because the point you made before is absolutely right. Most veterans won't ask.
Right.
They won't ask. They feel like they should figure it out themselves. It's part of their disposition. It's also part of the way they're trained.
Yep.
But what we did was go to them and reach out. We also have a series of veterans' homes that are state-run in New Jersey. And I was very proud of the work that we did there. That's where folks, you know, getting older, and they can't either live on their own anymore because of some health concerns, or they don't want to.
Right.
And we've been able to take care of folks there as well. There are ways to get this done in partnership between private organizations, non-governmental organizations, the state and the federal government. You just need leadership at the top that says this is a priority. And I was quite frankly stunned too at the debate that we did not get asked one veterans question. We
prepared, before Veterans Day.
Yeah. We in my own debate prep, we prepared.
I mean, Veterans Day was 48 hours away.
Yep.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're
sure.
going to come back. Our Veterans Town Hall Forum already this morning, earlier, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, Governor Sununu, the state Republicans running for governor, Representative Chris Pappas, Chris Christie here in person back on Good Morning New Hampshire, the Pulse of an H. Bank of New Hampshire stage in a moment. This has been a wonderful discussion for 3 hours on veterans. You know, we can talk about the war between Israel and Hamas. We can talk about inflation. We can talk about President Biden meeting with the leader of China yesterday. We can talk about divisives. We can talk about a lot of stuff. But you know what? I thought it would be a novel concept to focus on veterans for three hours. If they're not going to do it in the debates, we'll do it here. The primary, of course, coming up. The Secretary of State on, you know, yesterday, January 23rd. Chris Christie, he's running. He's a Republican. He's a former governor of New Jersey in person here. Bank of New Hampshire stage. Phil Taub, Swim of the Mission, one of our great sponsors. We thank our friends at Laconia Harley-Davidson as well, and Outdoor Pride. But Governor and Phil, I'm going to – something we were talking about during the break. So, again, I'm worried about our future. Because I'm looking at the number of younger people. In New Hampshire alone, there are almost 80 openings in the New Hampshire State Police. Very honorable, noble career. I would think there should be 8, maybe. And I'm worried about public service. I'm worried about the morale of our country. I know we're flawed. I know we have faults as people and as a country. But the last time I checked, we're the freest nation on earth. We're the country everyone wants to come to. We're the country that has helped and fed more people around the world than any nation ever. But yet, I worry that younger people in colleges, and I'm not going to go to the anti-Semitism, which I think is repugnant. I'm going to keep it non-topical. But I'm worried younger people for about 10 or 20 years in our most illustrious Ivy League and college and universities have basically been told America stinks. America's the problem. Your parents are market economy, our military, we're oppressors, we're colonizers, our police are all bad. And therefore, the front line of safety and freedom, the young people were told, is bad. Now, and they aren't teaching real history, in my humble opinion. I think if I asked a sophomore class at Yale or Princeton or Columbia, certainly Columbia, who Winston Churchill was, what role did Truman play ending World War II, who bombed Pearl Harbor, I don't know if they'd know the answers. So how do we feel better about our military and our veterans and more proud? Because that might spread in the public saying it's a really wonderful thing. I didn't know, by the way, live this morning, Governor Sununu calls in. I didn't know they just brought their son to Parris Island to become a Marine or sitting.
Yeah.
I didn't know
Semper
that.
Fi.
I didn't know that. So how do we get people to say, wow, my kid's waffling. I don't want him and her to live with me until they're 30 in the house. I want them to find themselves. Go join the National Guard. What a wonderful concept. How do we spread this?
Well, I think first, you talk about learning about the history of our country and the history that the people who have served our country and how they've contributed more than anyone else to the freedoms that you talked about in the first part of your comment. This still is the freest, richest, safest country in the world. We need to teach that history. And one, the schools don't do it. And you're, especially in our universities, they're hiring folks who have an agenda. And their agenda is not to teach kids, it's to push their particular political, philosophical point of view. And universities under the guise of free speech say, well, that's okay. Well, we've gotten so far into that end, we've forgotten to talk about the things that they're speaking against. We don't teach what this country has been for. Recently my wife went to a tour of Monticello. She was down at the University of Virginia, and she was appalled by the way they presented Thomas Jefferson, face forward as a slaveholder and an oppressor. The guy who at 33 years old wrote the Declaration of Independence. He founded the University of Virginia.
Forget about judging people, not judging people when they lived,
Right. There are certain times that in our country where we can learn, and we certainly have learned, that slavery was an abomination. Okay.
I think we had a civil war over it.
We had a civil war over it, and we had a president who freed the slaves as a matter of principle. When what other country in the world does that happen? Mm. So I think that's one thing. And we also said, look, I think there's an obligation at home.
But how's a swastika in this day and age on a college campus, including New Hampshire, or George Washington University, glory to the martyrs? Free speech, great. Open speech, great. But that's hatred. How is that accepted by certain university presidents who say, no, there's a line, you crossed it. And why? What are they afraid of?
You just put your finger on it, Jack. They live in fear of the political correctness of the far left in this country and in being canceled. And I think that what we need to do, and I said this the other night, we should fire these university presidents who are not doing their jobs and these board of trustees who participate in affirming, hiring, and tenuring these faculty members who are encouraging that type of hate. Because in the end, differences of opinion in this country are not only fine, they're encouraged. But it's for them to be calling for intifada, which means the elimination of Jews throughout the entire world.
Yeah.
I bet you, here's the bad thing about the lack of education. I bet you, I saw this happening on the campus at Columbia this week. I bet you 2/3 of the kids marching don't even know what the hell an intifada is.
No.
Don't have a clue.
Did you see the two young sophomores in New York City last week? It wasn't Columbia, but another college. Reporter asked a good question. You're out protesting, worried about the loss of Palestinians and innocent women and children in Gaza. Okay. What do you think of Hamas? They said, well, they're a governing body in Palestine. Israel is killing women and children in Gaza. Israel is the oppressor. That's the term. Israel is the aggressor. And then the reporter just said, do you know what happened on October 7th, Saturday, October 7th in Israel? And they said, no. Our professor just said Israel is randomly bombing Palestinians in Gaza for more control and more land. That's what the professor told us. So they're out there protesting.
Yep.
And they honestly don't know. And I think parents need to play a role in education if they're not getting it in school. Talking about World War II, talking about why Normandy, why we went onto that continent, what Adolf Hitler, what he did, Band of Brothers, it's a great series. Watch the scene when they roll in and they're near the end, and Hitler's on the run. And they come across their first concentration camp, and Easy Company said, "What is this? We better call ahead. Who are these people crawling out of the holes, holding their dead babe? What is going on here? Skin and bones. Who are these people?" And the young people don't have any context. Because those professors in college don't have to put their name on a ballot.
Yep.
Phil.
Yeah, let me just say this, that right now there are American hostages being held in Gaza in tunnels. We did lose more than 30 Americans, when Hamas attacked. There's a large force of Delta Force and Navy SEALs from SEAL Team 6 in Israel right now who are prepared to put themselves in harm's way when they get an opportunity to go into those tunnels and rescue our American hostages. And you know, Jack, we do a lot of stuff for the Navy SEAL community and our special forces. We had Jessica Buchanan here this last summer who was rescued in Somalia by the Navy SEALs. And she got up there in front of us and said, I cannot tell you what an incredible feeling it is to know to be an American overseas, being held, being kidnapped by our enemies, knowing that our American military has not forgotten you and is going to come and rescue you. And when this conversation I'm listening to about our college students, do they understand what that means to be an American and to know that our military will come in, they will put themselves in harm's way?
Only if they lost their freedom and their bubble wrap would they know what you're talking about. Seriously.
No.
Real quickly, you're running for president.
I am.
You knew that, right?
I did. I knew I was up here for some reason, Jack. It wasn't just to see you and
Phil.
Well,
you know what? We have a great place for second homes. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, but one thing's I weren't, and you have
four kids. Children.
Okay.
Between 30 and 20.
So what motivates you to run for president in a very divisive time? Because I actually do have a theory like that country song. I think most people are good. I think there are a wonderful bunch of young kids out there. The governor's son going to become a Marine. I didn't even know that today. There are good families and good people, but it seems to be that the divisiveness, the national media perpetuates it. Every story is divisive. Everything is, you know, flash, Trump's legal trial or this and Biden that, and, you know, it's all divisive. And I don't want to get into the politics of that, but it's all divisive. And I look at the morale, the mood of most people. They can't wait for the weekend to come and just shut it all off. Because if you wake up in the morning, I don't know how you get out of bed in the morning when you look at the news. So how do you assess, as Chris Christie, how do you assess the mood and the morale of this country versus when you were governor of New Jersey?
It's significantly more angry, significantly more divided. And I think that, you know, it's part of why at the debate last week, we got a chance for the first time to do a 45-second closing statement. And I talked about what's great about this country. Like that America, being an American is a gift. It's a gift. None of us earned it. All of us who are here now have been given this as a gift. And that people are dying to get here.
Right.
And that we have an obligation to recognize that every day and recognize how fortunate we are and ask ourselves, as a generation, what are we going to contribute to making this country better? And so when you say, like, what motivates you to run for president, what motivates me now is that I've already had a great American life. This country owes me nothing. I am in debt to the country. And so if I can do something to help bring us together, to remind us of our greatness, to remind us of, you know, what our not only our obligations are, but what our aspirations should be, that we should do that.
Would you ever be against, because when I say this, I'm not talking about a mandatory draft. Would you ever be opposed in states like New Hampshire, New Jersey, every state, some sense of community service for a graduating public high school or just a graduating senior in high school as part of their graduation, a six-month, doesn't matter if they ride around with the EMTs, parks and recreation, library, police, firefighters, but some kind of service as part of their graduation so they understood that these things that we appreciate, or when you call 911 and you have a medical emergency and someone may be 15 minutes away because they don't have enough people working, do you think we need some kind of sense of service?
You know, Jack, at the beginning of my professional career, I thought we didn't need to do something like that. But now, 35 years later, I think we're in a place in the country where we've fallen so far behind on the things that you were talking about understanding what a gift this country is, about all of those things, that I do think that having some type of mandatory service, public service, doesn't have to be military, but it could be. Doesn't have to be law enforcement, but it could be.
Just like you have to pass math and science, some kind of sense of service.
Where you understand then.
And you could even pick and elect what it is.
Right, and do something to contribute.
Right.
I say when I go to schools, I say to folks all the time who ask me about running for office, you don't have to run for office, but you should do something that is bigger than your own self-interest for part of your career, something where you're giving back to somebody else. And, you know, you see Phil doing what he does every day to try to help in that regard. And there's, luckily, tens of millions of Americans who have that ethos about them. We need to make sure we pass that down. And if we need to do it in a way, you know, to expose them to it so that it becomes a part of what they believe as a volunteer for later in their life, that I think that would be a good thing for the country.
Final word, Phil Tupp.
Yeah, I'm not running for president, but I believe
you're
strongly.
Not?
I'm
what,
really
what,
not.
What, wait, 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 what about governor?
Okay, this is about Governor Christie right now. So look, I believe very strongly. I think every young person in this country should do some service, whether it's in the military or outside the military. I think getting overseas, opening your eyes to the larger world, and finding out that this really is the greatest country in the world, hands down.
No doubt.
I mean, even if it's delivering Meals on Wheels to seniors in your community for 6 months, one day a week, just to get a sense. Oh, boy, I go by that yellow house every day. I never knew that old guy or that woman lived there alone every day, and I got to meet her and him, and they're pretty nice. And now I feel like that I can say hi to them. You know, I don't know.
And the satisfaction that you get from watching the reaction of someone who you're helping.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's something to that when, you know, I say all the time that for me, public service is about helping people that you probably will never meet and certainly you'll never know, but you've helped to improve their lives. And that there's a great satisfaction for me in that. And I think that if you expose most people to it, they would find satisfaction in that. It makes the country better.
Thank you. Thank you, Governor Christie, for the time.
Thanks, Jack.
And, you know, when
time.
You were governor of New Jersey, I remember once you were in a Dallas Cowboys booth.
Yeah.
But you have a couple teams in New York. The Giants aren't doing much. The Patriots get to play them after the bye week. That would be pretty lackluster.
Yeah,
the
something.
Jets, though, you never know. But are you still a Cowboys fan?
Still a Cowboys fan. And Jack, it was the thing I could boot for in New Jersey more than anything else.
I remember I was
else.
Watching. I didn't even know you. I'm watching. I go, wow, this is New Jersey governor. Isn't he up there with Jerry Jones?
Yeah, because our northern part of our state are mostly Giants fans, and the southern part of our state are mostly Eagles fans. So they all hate the Cowboys. So
I won't even ask where it comes from, but thank you.
But that's courage, Jack. Let me tell you, that's courage, baby.
One of the goals, really the simple goal this morning, was to talk about veterans issues. Go ahead, Phil, for the balance of the show in the 3 hours. And in a nonpartisan way, Phil Tobb, and I appreciate you being here and some of the mission and the team, and great to meet some of the folks. But I think you're like me, where you kind of have these peaks, like when you have your swim of the mission and the SEALs are coming in, or you're doing an event, you and your wife, Julie, you do it, and then things are quiet after. And we just had Veterans Day, and what I was struck on Veterans Day was the wonderful show of support in the NFL, like the Air Force Base. They had Howie Long, and they had the team, and Gronk jumped, and he was with and it was just great to see the Air Force, young cadet, you know, the people, you know, the students and the members who are going to become, and that was on Veterans Day, you know, Veterans Day weekend, and then crickets. And I just, the thing I kind of look for, and we each have our own reasons if we care about this stuff, why we do it. To me, it's simple. I was blessed with the ability to do a show, and through that microphone, I can advocate for those who served. It's really a simple elevator mission statement, and having a dad who passed when I was young as a Marine, and I just feel it's like, you know, what simple thing I could do. If you can, you should. But then I just, there are times when I just sort of say, what's it like to be a veteran or military family in August or November or July or February, and you're alone, and you feel like no one gave a damn. No one gives a damn. No one's there. And you don't want like, woe's me. It's not a hand out. It's a hand up. But when I see these suicide numbers, when I see the number of veterans in Manchester that need clothing or food, homelessness, again, suicide, this is a major problem. But most people are more interested, what am I having for dinner tonight? What am I doing this weekend? What am I watching on TV tonight? And my real fear, and I'm going to let you kind of wrap thoughts on this and let you go, is until we don't have freedom, I don't know if more people aren't just going to kind of go as they are and just think someone's always going to take care of it. Someone's going to go rescue those Americans in those tunnels. Someone's going to be there. And I worry that they may not. I just worry about that sometimes. I don't know how more people just don't care about being free. I don't get that. It's the one thing that should unite us.
Jack, yeah, first of all, thanks for everything you do, because I know this is near and dear to your heart. Probably the most important thing that you talk about, and you talk about a lot. You do a lot for Veterans Count, and you support some of the mission, and appreciate all that, and it helps. What you're doing talking about this helps, because not enough people are talking about it on the radio, writing about it, right, on television. So I just want to start by saying thank you, because it does make a difference. I will just say on the journey that Julie and I have been on since 2016, when we first had this idea of let's start a charity, and you know, we started in an angry place because we were really upset with what we saw amongst veterans. Too many homeless veterans, too many veterans looking for jobs, too many veterans with mental health issues not getting the help they need. And so we did start in an angry place, but I will tell you, Jack, fast forward to today, and we've been able to give away almost $10 million to support more than 50 veteran service organizations here in New Hampshire and across the country. And in that journey, Jack, I and Julie, we have met the most incredible people, including you, Jack. But we have met so many veterans and their families and people that have a heart for veterans, from the folks that run these veteran service organizations. There's some of them here as a lookout, like Camp Resilience is here for today, a great organization that's done more than 100 recreational retreats to help veterans.
I saw, there's a gentleman Steve earlier
is here.
Yeah, is that him?
Yeah,
there?
Yes, who runs Camp Resilience. And
Steve, why don't you come up here?
Yeah, and, you know, I will tell you, from those organizations to the people that have surrounded themselves around some of the mission, I would say to you now, I've got to just quickly do the math, but it's thousands of donors, Jack,
right,
and hundreds of volunteers have come to support what we are doing. So I'm going to focus on the positive. And I do get frustrated sometimes that not everybody sees what we do. But I choose to focus on so many people, Jack, that do care and love this country.
You know what my fuel is? Is when I heard about that woman, for example, in Gilmington, New Hampshire, Gilmington Iron Works. A listener of mine said she hasn't left the house in months. Her husband passed away. He was a big American Legion guy. Did a lot in the community. I said, why isn't she leaving the house? They called me after the show. She needs a ramp. She has a hip issue. She can't get out to a car to grocery shop. So people are and I just said, that's unacceptable. Her husband served. Within 5 minutes, some listener calls and said, Jack, talk to me during the break. Here's my credit card. I want to pay for that ramp. Just from listening to her story,
right,
and she has a ramp now, and that's what makes it. I want to. We're going to end with our friend from Camp Resilience.
Yes.
But right now we have a caller. We have another guest. I guess we got everyone but Donald Trump on the show today. Governor Doug Burgum, North Dakota, presidential candidate, Republican running. We just had Governor Chris Christie earlier, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy. Governor, thanks for tuning in on our Veterans Town Hall.
Jack, great to be with you, and always good to be with you, and thanks for everything you do for veterans.
How have you done it in North Dakota? What do you do to break through to make sure that they're getting the support? We have too many veterans taking their lives. Mental health is a crisis for all Americans, let alone veterans. What have you done in North Dakota that you could take to Washington?
Well, there's a number of things, but the first thing is just we have to start with an objective, and we've said we want to be the most military-friendly state of the nation, and that's both active military and retirees. We've eliminated income tax for military retiree income and eliminated income tax completely for active military. When people are, you know, moving from one state to another, you know, active military, their spouses sometimes can't follow because they don't have the ability to have their licensure follow them. And so then we end up with families that are split apart where you've got someone serving at Minot or Grand Forks Air Force Base and their family staying home someplace else. So we said, hey, if you're a trailing spouse, if your license works someplace else, it works in North Dakota. So we just keep going down the list, you know, every session, what can we do to be stronger and better support? And of course, we do have some, you know, VA hospitals that are good and getting better, but our state is big. It's the size of all six New England states. We got veterans that are spread across the state in rural areas. We've got veterans that from our five tribal nations that we share geography with. You know, that's a group of Native Americans that volunteer at a higher rate than any other group in the country. They don't often have the services. So, you know, pushing in through the congressional delegation to get the voucher program in so they can get their veteran services at someplace local without having to drive hundreds of miles is key. What we saw, and we visited the Liberty House in New Hampshire last week, and the great work they're doing with around providing sober living and focusing on both mental and physical health and recovery and helping people get jobs and financial security and then independence. I mean, they've got a great program that they're doing there. And, you know, there's an organization that's running with almost zero federal dollars but they're doing it with the support of local communities, and we've got to get behind and support organizations like that that are really making a difference.
Well, Governor Burgum, you thank you for mentioning Liberty House there on my show last week. This year alone in Manchester, 2,200 veterans have needed services, including clothes and food support and transitional housing from Liberty House. If they weren't getting it from that nonprofit, what would happen to those veterans?
Well, this is, again, I look at Liberty House and what, you know, Catherine and I, and Catherine, the First Lady, she's been in recovery for 21 years. I mean, this is near and dear to her in terms of an issue. We do have, this idea that we're losing 22 veterans a day in America to completed suicides is a crisis that affects all of us. And this shouldn't be something that is like Republicans, you know, versus Democrats, independents. I mean, these veterans come in all, you know, all from all geographies and all income levels, and they're all suffering. And we've got a solemn commitment that we take care of them when they're in the service and when they're out. And we're not living up to that right now. But I think supporting places like Liberty House, which we would call the best of America, where people are getting it done, they're doing it right, and they're doing it in their local communities and raising awareness. It's not a one-size-fits-all federal program. It is actually getting behind organizations like that that are really making a difference in people's lives, and there's absolutely a way to do that.
All right. Governor, thanks for checking in. One of the Republican presidential candidates, our Veterans Town Hall Forum, Governor Burgum. Thank you. We'll see you soon here, I imagine.
Yes, you will. And always great to be with you, Jack, and thanks for all you do for the veterans.
Thank you. Phil, I'm going to have you introduce our friend because he was nice enough to come. And I remember, I've had the story on before, Camp Resilience, but it's a great way to end because it's a wonderful example of something that is making the difference. So, Phil.
Yeah, and Swim with the Mission is very proud to be able to support Camp Resilience, who does so many amazing things for our veterans. At the end of the day, veterans that are struggling want to hear from other veterans and hear their success story. But, Steve, you're now the director. Executive Director of Camp Resilience, and maybe tell Jack a little bit about what you're doing.
Sure. Well, thank you very much, Phil, and thank you, Jack, for this program. This is tremendous. This great conversation. Appreciate you taking the time to do this. And so Camp Resilience is a private nonprofit here in New Hampshire, started in Guilford, New Hampshire area, been in existence since 2014, over 100 retreats. Since that time, well over 1,000 participants. What we do is we get veterans, and we also work with first responders. We get them together, groups of about 10, 8 to 12 participants per retreat, and we focus on peer-to-peer support. We do life skills workshops around stuff that they might be dealing with, whether it's related to PTSD or anger management or substance abuse or whatever it is, life skills workshops. But then the secret sauce is we get them outside. We do outdoor experiential learning. We leverage the beauty of our amazing state to get people outside and, breathe some fresh air, interact with one another.
How did it come about?
So a group of patriots in Guilford, veterans mostly, but also concerned citizens, got together and just came up with an idea. Wouldn't this be a great place to get veterans to come and spend some time together?
You know, Phil, one of the takeaways maybe today, we're not doing a synopsis of points, maybe what we learned, but when we try and spread this word, what works at Camp Resilience is what he just said, the veteran to veteran, the peer thing. And I've noticed sometimes only veterans can sometimes have a discussion with veterans, even if they served in a Korean War or Afghanistan, but they're a veteran. I saw Don Boldick talk with the Navy SEAL over here. I saw Scott Brown earlier talking with someone over here. And I'm wondering, maybe one of the things we should try to do in this state anyway is, and General Boldick touched upon it, instead of identifying the veterans out there that aren't touched by groups like Camp Resilience, how do we get a network of veterans communicating to veterans if the public's not going to do it?
Yeah, and I will say that I think we do have the answer to reducing suicide, Jack. I am very optimistic and hopeful. What Swim with the Mission has been doing is holding these annual retreats where we get the VA in the same room as the state and our more than 40 veteran service organizations together. They never knew each other. They used to work in silos. They now know each other. So veterans are not falling through the cracks as much as they used to. And Swim with the Mission, we're being very strategic about what we're funding. We're funding programs like Camp Resilience that get veterans out of their homes with other veterans.
And then we're
doubling down on more service dogs.
Right? Well, I'll tell you right now, the service canine aspect, how much, Phil, is it about a dog to train for the emotional support to meet the veteran if it's a fit?
Yeah, a good dog's about $15,000.
1.5?
Yeah.
So we have a lot of people that like to give. I mean, maybe the goal is to raise $1 million. Why doesn't the VA, with that budget, just set aside money for a canine program to support that training of an animal?
I know.
It's a lot better than an opioid.
It sure is.
I'm telling you.
I agree. So rather than focus on that, we're out there in the business community, and we're getting it done, Jack.
People want to learn more about Camp Resilience because we're on a bunch of stations right up into Maine right now and beyond. What's the best way?
Jump on our website, campresilience.org. I know resilience is a big word. I have a hard time spelling it. Google will help you out. Campresilience.org.
And you're still up in the Lakes region?
Up in the Lakes region, we're not a place, we're an organization. We don't own property. We keep costs down.
So you move around, you do?
But mostly in the Lakes region, but we use facilities around the state.
Plan an idea. I'm on the bus, being on the ocean a lot in the summer with buddies that have nice boats, including tuna fishing boats. And to them, it's like full-time work. I mean, catching, it's a big fish. But maybe we could organize a group someday and just take a group out on the water and take them out to the, some of the Jeffrey's Ledge and some of the better fishing holes just for the day.
That'd be awesome. We'd love to.
I'd love to. It'd be an honor because some of these folks would do it. They can hold about 10 to 12. All right. Well, I want to thank everyone here and Bank of New Hampshire State, J-Dog back on the board. Thank you to all the folks that do care about our veterans and trying to do better. And it was really a pleasure to do our Veterans Town Hall 2024, first ever, 3 hours focusing on veterans issues, veterans care, making people understand that freedom isn't free. It really isn't. A lot of times we think it is. It's not free. Thank a veteran. Support a veteran. Don't just say thanks. Support a veteran. So appreciate it all. And again, big thanks to Laconia Harley-Davidson, Swim of the Mission, Outdoor Pride for your landscaping and snow stuff because we're getting into that season. Not a bad looking Thursday. I'll be back in the studios tomorrow. And a reminder, the Pulse of an H nationally, thousands of you streaming in the morning. And to our listener north of Helsinki, Finland, Yari, I love it each morning, sending us notes 200 miles north of Helsinki. And our listeners in South Korea, believe it or not. Thank you. Good morning, New Hampshire, the Pulse of Nate Shackey. Thank you so much, and thank our friends here, Bank of New Hampshire Stage, Capital Center for the Arts. We'll see you later.